They have rested at the Trump trial. Donald Trump will not take the stand. Alvin Bragg will not get the chance to cross-examine him. They called Robert Costello today. The judge and Judge Marchand, Juan Marchand, and Robert Costello. Costello is the guy who was Michael Cohen's attorney for a while until Michael Cohen decided not to pay any of his legal bills. Robert Costello and the judge got into it yesterday because Costello was like openly reacting, bad body language, they say, when the judge would make stupid rulings. He was, Costello is like a longtime federal prosecutor. He was like rolling his eyes and going, oh man, stuff like that. And the judge got so mad, clear the courtroom. Now, what is the reason why they can't have closing arguments today? I mean, it's Tuesday. Memorial Day is when? Monday? Like, why don't they have closing arguments today? Give it to the jury. Because the judge is hoping that the jury will forget that Michael Cohen is a serial liar and that he admitted yesterday to stealing what? Was it $30,000 or $60,000? I'm not sure the specifics. I'm not sure the specifics matter. Michael Cohen in court yesterday confessed to a crime worse than the crime Donald Trump is charged with, although maybe I shouldn't say that because we still don't know what is the second crime that elevates a misdemeanor, which is no longer subject to prosecution because the statute of limitations has expired on that misdemeanor, but it could be revived and brought back to life if there's a second crime, which we have not yet had identified for us. That's why Robert Costello was rolling his eyes yesterday in court at Juan Marchand. Now, Brad Smith was not able to roll his eyes in court yesterday. Brad Smith is former head of the Federal Election Commission, and Judge Marchand would not let him testify in court as to what election interference is and what it is not. So the strategy on waiting until Tuesday to have closing arguments is hopefully the jury will forget everything they've heard. The strategy Marchand employed on not allowing Brad Smith to testify is he's hoping, Marchand is hoping, that if the jury hears, well, Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to, you know, campaign finance violations, and he worked for Donald Trump, so Donald Trump must be guilty too. Brad Smith could have come in and said, here's what a Federal Election Commission campaign finance violation is and what it isn't. But Marchand doesn't want that. He doesn't want an informed jury. And there are people who are going, well, you know, if he instructs the jury the right way, then this is an automatic. First of all, this should be over now. He should have issued a directed verdict. Should have said, there is no case here. You didn't prove your case, Alvin Bragg. Go away. But Juan Marchand is not going to do that because Juan Marchand is a political donor to Joe Biden. I know it keeps getting more ridiculous by the minute, does it not? Yes, it does. Speaking of ridiculous, we're back to Columbus crime as profiled in the New York Times and the escalation of the same murders in the city since George Floyd's death, which they equate to the start of the pandemic. The pandemic had nothing to do. People were shut in at home. If anything, the numbers on crime should have gone down. No, no. They did not. They escalated. They multiplied. And then the Times talks to a juvenile prosecutor in Columbus. Now, you talk about a guy who's got a lot of time to play golf with Andrew Ginther. It'd be a prosecutor of juvenile crimes in Columbus because we have juvenile court judges who said that an attempt to get 10,000 car thefts under control by putting the Kia boys in jail for stealing said cars was racist. So Euripides Chimbidis, a prosecutor who handles juvenile cases in Columbus, maybe they should have written who's theoretically supposed to handle juvenile cases in Columbus. They interview him, and Mr. Chimbidis says, almost any case I have that's a murder, aggravated robbery, felonious assault with a shooting, when we get to the phone dumps, there's stuff with them posing with guns or threatening to do harm to people. It's a constant. In my view, they're putting themselves at risk, making other kids want to come after them. And then this story talks about a tragic case of a 15-year-old. I'm not giving you the names because their families have been through enough pain through the malignant incompetence of Andrew Ginther and the people who work for Columbus's excuse for a mayor. I see no reason to put these families through more pain unless it is to memorialize a life well lived like Mackenzie Ridley's. But this 15-year-old lived on the east side. His mother said that he knew almost 24 people who had been murdered. Think of that. A 15-year-old. A 15-year-old who knows 24 people who have been murdered. And then, this is where the story gets even worse. The young man was home in April of 2021 when, after a day of virtual classes, should have been in school, wasn't. Great job, American Federation of Teachers, Ohio Education Association. You proud of yourself, Randy Weingarten? You proud of yourself, Scott DeMauro? After a day of virtual classes, the young man arranged by text to have marijuana delivered to the apartment. Can you do that on Uber? I don't know. Uber Eats? Uber Weed? I don't know. But he arranged by text to have marijuana delivered to the apartment. How many of my listeners right now, Jeff, are going, you can have marijuana delivered to your apartment? Like all of them, because all of you are law-abiding citizens. So a minivan pulls up outside with the drug. Young man ventures out to collect it. The driver delivered more than marijuana. He delivered lead, shooting at the young man. The young man who ordered the marijuana then pulled out a revolver and returned fire. The driver of the van was hit in the leg. The young man who ordered the marijuana was shot twice in the chest and bled to death. I mean, this is the city we have because of the horrendous crime policies and the indifference and inaction of a mayor who talks a good game. Oh, public health crisis, summer programs, recreational opportunities. But nothing ever changes, including the fact that Democrats have a free run of the city. You can't even get a look for a city office if you have an R next to your name. So what did the kid get who drove up and shot first? He got involuntary manslaughter. He shot first. He was delivering drugs to a guy's house, shot first, and got involuntary manslaughter. You want to know why I mock the Franklin County juvenile justice system? Right there is why. Right there. Kid's old enough to drive a car, theoretically. He's delivering pot. Why is he not tried as an adult, and why is he not put away forever for murders? Because we leave dangerous people on the street. What do you think we get? Principle of sowing and reaping. You get more than you sow. You get what you sow more than you sow later than you sow it. Works for everything. So the mom of the 15-year-old who ordered the pot and got shot says she knew her son had a gun. I work a lot. I work around the clock. He was my protector. He protected the house. She said she had it. If she had it to do over again, she would not have allowed this. And this is a familiar tale to the woman I told you I was going to tell you about. And her name is Melissa Thomas St. Clair. She's a middle school teacher. And she was motivated to start Mothers of Murdered Children in Columbus. And I love the fact that she's not running from this. She's not buying into the Biden narrative that it's somebody else's fault. She says, every one of us has a story. If there was better accountability within our parenting, then maybe some decisions of our children would have been different. And sadly, her own adult son was fatally stabbed while trying to collect on a drug debt. Yeah, it all coalesces into a tsunami of hopelessness. The lack of education in Columbus City schools convinces these young people that they have no future, that there is nothing good attainable to them because they haven't been taught how to read or write. Their obsession, like all young people's obsession, with social media, which leads them to pose with guns and, you know, fake Twitter and Tumblr muscles, and then violence results. Now, we had a Biden government in mourning yesterday. MOURNING. And what were they in mourning about? No, not their poll numbers. Don't be a wise guy. They were in mourning over the death of the Butcher of Tehran. The Butcher of Tehran. That was the nickname of Ibrahim Raisi. One of the Iranian strongmen who died in a helicopter crash in the mountains. At the UN, which is woke and hates Israel, they stood up and offered their condolences to Raisi and to Raisi's family, which prompted the Israeli ambassador to say this.
Just this morning, you held a moment of silence to commemorate the mass murdering president of Iran. A month ago, Raisi, the Butcher of Tehran, launched an unprecedented missile and drone strike on Israel to murder thousands of innocent Israelis, deliberately. The blood of thousands of innocent Iranians is on his hands. Women, members of the LGBTQ community, peaceful protesters, and many, many others.
Raisi well earned his nickname, the Butcher of Tehran. They would hang people from cranes in such mass numbers that they would tell the soon-to-be-hung victims to write their names on their palm so that when they piled them on trucks to take them away to mass graves, they would know exactly who they had killed. All right, it's the UN, Bruce. They're super woke. We don't expect them to do things the right way. What about our own State Department? Oh, Matthew Miller is a spokesman for the State Department. And Matthew Miller also offered up his condolences to the nation of Iran in the death of Ibrahim Raisi. Now, I've always wondered, what kind of White House pool reporter would I be? You know, you see these people, they're asking like bootlick questions. And then Peter Doocy comes in, he asks a real question. And I think, you know, given my history at Ohio State and other places, I'd be the Doocy. I'd be the Doocy in the crowd, right? Well, there was a Doocy in the crowd at the State Department. I don't know who this grizzled old dude is, but he was questioning Matthew Miller on the absurdity of offering condolences on the death of Ibrahim Raisi, who America knows as the Butcher of Tehran.
Can I just ask you about the state? What exactly is official condolences?
It's a condolences on behalf of the United States government.
Well, then why doesn't it say that? This is like official condolences means absolutely nothing. And I'm not even sure why you're offering condolences if this guy was as bad as you say he was.
Look,
why? I mean,
because we regret any loss of life. We don't want to see people die in helicopter crashes. It doesn't change our view of him, our regime.
But there is not one person you can think of that the United States didn't want to see in an air accident.
There were people on board that aircraft who have families. We thought that's an appropriate step to take. It's the step the United States government has taken when any number of foreign leaders with whom we had vehement disagreements.
When they start going to the route, then you know they're caught. And he went on to say, you know, we offered official condolences on the death of Joseph Stalin. And the reporter goes, yeah, but he was an ally in World War II. Help us win that. So this is just ridiculous. This shows you how beholden to Iran the Biden administration is. I guess the good news is if you're a descendant of Adolf Hitler, you should be getting flowers today from the Biden administration. Maybe I'm too harsh. I don't know. Maybe I should express my condolences. In fact, I think I will express my condolences because it is a shame. It is a tragic shame when we lose a perfectly good helicopter. So I offer my condolences to the helicopter and the helicopter manufacturers. Now, we talked about crime, the New York Times story, the reason why we have such crime in our country. And if you listen to Joe Biden's speech at Morehouse College, it's because we have racist cops and black people have no chance. And I tried to show you yesterday what a lie that is. But I'm not going to convince any liberals of that. I'm not going to convince any leftists of that. The guy who might be able to convince some liberals and leftists of that is Bill Maher, who last night went on Gutfeld and had this to say about Joe Biden's race pandering at Morehouse College.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think there is a purpose to him being so stark and bleak?
I think it's not helpful.
Yeah.
First of all, it's anachronistic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that speech would have made sense some years ago. Mm-hmm. I think we should acknowledge that racism still persists, and we should always be making remedial remedies for it. But we're not in the past. I always keep saying, let's live in the year we're living in. We're not living in the year where you have to be 10 times better
mm-hmm.
to succeed if you're a person of color. And in some instances, it's an advantage.
Yeah.
In some places, it's not an advantage. But we're not living in that world that he's talking about. And I don't think that helps anybody.
We are not living in the world that he, meaning Joe Biden, is talking about. No, we are not. We are not living in that world. And kudos to him for saying it. I mean, Maher is more of a truth teller than most people on the left. I've said before, I vehemently disagree with his view of abortion, but at least his view of abortion is, yeah, it's murder and I don't care. There's an element of honesty in his immorality. And I also liked what he had to say about the fact that we've devolved into this era where Democrats just refuse to engage on topics, and too many Republicans refuse to engage on topics. Here's more on that.
We are polarized. I don't think we can deny that. The point is that we can also be friends. That's
yeah,
it.
Right.
We can't. Let's not pretend that these disagreements are not profound.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say, okay, they are profound, but you know what? There's 90 other things we could talk about which we wouldn't disagree on. And I can't hate you. I've said it a million times. You can hate Trump. You can't hate all the people who like him.
Mm-hmm.
It's half the country.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not blind to Donald Trump's faults. I get it, why people choose to vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who's conservative once said to me, what you don't get, you liberals don't get about Trump, is that we don't like him either.
Mm-hmm.
We just see him as a bulwark against the nonsense on the left. And I understand that
mm-hmm.
because there is a lot of nonsense on the left.
Yeah, now if he's talking about having conversations about things like energy policy and monetary policy, then yes, I'll sit down, I'll debate the merits of capitalism and all that. If he's talking about men who want to be women and women who want to be men, which I don't think Maher shares that view, then there is no quarter to give on that. Light has no compatibility with darkness. You know, the 11th commandment that a lot of people live by is thou shalt be nice. No, thou shalt be someone who tells the truth always.